Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of Boat Briefing, our weekly digest of all the goings-on from the world of superyachts and an introduction to some of the characters that make this industry just so interesting. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and as ever, I'm joined by my trusty cohorts, Caroline White, Deputy Editor, and Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, Features Director. Hi guys, great to be back.
Yeah, great to be back as well, nice to see you.
Yeah, lovely to be with you. We've just been discussing it's about 1,000 degrees in London right now. You don't feel like you're missing the boat shows. You could be in the south of France.
Yeah, I swear Monaco is always like 1,000 degrees whenever it is.
Yeah, it's pretty sweaty out there. I tried to take the dog for a walk earlier and I turned around. That's how pathetic I am in the sun. Right, a bit later in the podcast, we'll be talking to a true legend of the sailing scene, Ken Reed. He is the 2 times America's Cup helmsman for Dennis Connor, president of North Sails, the captain of Comanche, the incredible Hodgdon sailing yacht, which holds a number of records, including the fastest crossing of the Atlantic by a monohull sailing yacht and the 24-hour distance record for a monohull sailing yacht. She actually covered 618 nautical miles in 24 hours, averaging 25.75 knots. Just amazing performance, ridiculous speed. So Ken as well, wears a few hats, president of North Sails, captain of Comanche. And he sits down with Cecile Gout, the executive editor of our US edition, and he talks about his career and how he used to hate sailing. So stick around for that. It's a really interesting insight and behind the scenes look at Ken's live career and what he's up to on the water nowadays. We have some more news at the top of the show. Nominations are now open for the 2021 Boat International Design and Innovation Awards, as well as the World Superyacht Awards.
Perhaps it's worth saying something, Stu, about the difference between the two, because I know that's something that comes up quite a lot when people are looking to enter.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I'm often asked what is the difference between those two awards programs. So let me elaborate. So the Design and Innovation Awards celebrate specific design aspects of a superyacht, whether it's exterior styling or naval architecture or lifestyle design feature, which could be an amazing beach club or a particularly novel sun deck, for instance. So the judges for these awards are therefore mostly drawn from the design community, and they're looking at specific parts of a yacht. The World Superyacht Awards, on the other hand, are judged by a very experienced panel of superyacht owners, and their job is to look past styling and the more superficial elements to examine the quality of the yacht as a whole. Did the owner get what he or she wanted? What's the overall quality like? Does the boat work holistically? Did it meet its brief? So more of an overview, essentially. So I hope that's clear. Nominations are open now for both programs. So if you're listening and you have an eligible boat, get them in now. You can see all the terms and conditions and the rules for entry on our website. Also on our website, you can order the brand new Superyachts book. This is the ultimate superyachting annual, a real collector's item. And this year's edition features superyachts such as Bold, Luminosity, Excellence and Flying Fox. Usually we launch this book, of course, at the Monaco Yacht Show at a big blowout. That can't happen this year, but it is available right now. It's volume 34. It's an incredible book, real quality piece of work. So go grab your copy. Now, in pop culture news, can somebody please explain to me why suddenly everyone's talking about the movie Tenet?
So Tenet is Christopher Nolan's new mind-bending blockbuster. And my main takeaway from it was that it was incredibly confusing, which is unsurprising since this is the guy who brought us Inception. What's really interesting about it from our point of view, though, is that this was largely filmed on board the ice-class 73-meter Explorer yacht Planet Nine, which was launched by Admiral in 2018. I mean, we're used to seeing a scene of a film filmed on a superyacht or perhaps an episode of a series, but quite rarely do you get this much of a film on a superyacht. I mean, literally half the film is on the superyacht. There's quite a scary scene in the master cabin. Somebody gets bludgeoned to death with a gold bar in a technical looking space. I should probably have said that was a spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry. I haven't said who though. So that's, yeah.
That's true.
Anyway, so she's for sale, the yacht with Fraser for 85 million euros at the moment, if anybody's interested. But it's, yeah. Yeah.
It's a cool boat. Big fan of that boat.
Yeah,
done some awesome stuff too. It's done some real exploring. It's been down in Antarctica fairly recently, pushed right down to the ice down there. Very cool.
Yeah, having seen both of them, Caroline, having seen that and the yacht that was on Succession, which one would you go for?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, I'm a real fan.
If you
fan
had to be bludgeoned to death on one book, which would it be?
I reckon Planet Nine. I mean, I'm a real sucker for an explorer yacht, and she's a very, very cool boat. Despite all the horrific things that happen, you still want to go on board.
You could take a security guard.
Yeah.
The Caroline White review of Tenet, out of 10?
Out of 10. Well, I'd say the film as a whole, I'd give a 7. Planet Nine's star turn, I'd give a 9. It was a very, very fetching performance.
There you go. Maybe we'll start doing movie reviews in Boat International. Talking about big boats, with pictures of Luerssen's massive 142-metre Project Opus on sea trials all over superyacht websites, we thought we'd spend a little time in this week's podcast on these 100-metre-plus giants. And not forgetting, too, that the news broke last week that Amels had signed its biggest ever yacht, by some distance its biggest ever yacht, 120-metre called Project Signature, designed by Espen Oino. It seems the appetite for these truly massive yachts isn't slowing down. Caroline, you got the news on this. What can you tell us?
Yes. So the current fleet is 53 yachts, the eldest of which is El Marusa, which is 150 metres and built by Samuda in 1865.
So, yeah, built by the Samuda brothers on the Isle of Dogs, right in the middle of London, I believe.
Yeah. Very glamorous, very glamorous location for building a yacht. The longest yacht among those is the 180-metre Azam, which was built by Luerssen in 2013. And another Luerssen is the largest by volume. That's 156-metre Dilbar, which was launched in 2016 with a GT of 15,617.
So there's 53 yachts on the water over 100 metres at the moment.
Yes, exactly.
Wow. So where were they all built?
Well, the leading shipyard in the fleet, as those boats suggest, is Luerssen, which has 19 superyachts among the 53. That's followed by Blom & Voss, which has 4, and Fedship and Ocean Co. and Benetti all have 3. The leading country is Germany with 30 superyachts, followed by the Netherlands with 7 and Italy with 6. I feel like I'm reading the weather forecast.
So that's how many are on the water now. So it's 53. So how many are being built?
There's been a consistent order book of about 20 yachts over 100 metres in build at any one time for years now. The longest at the moment is 183-metre Rev by Vard in Norway, which is scheduled for 2022.
So Rev is interesting because at the moment, Dilbar is the biggest in terms of volume and Azam is the biggest in terms of length, but Rev will knock both of them off their perches because she'll take the number one slot in both categories. You'll both be the longest and most voluminous superyacht in the world, or superyacht come research vessel.
Exactly. So we've spoken about Rev a little bit before, but because she's got so many extraordinary facilities on board, I imagine the volume would have had to be quite huge to get all of them in.
Mm.
I always think of Azam and Dilbar as such fan yachts. It's one of those kind of boats that people Instagram whenever they see them, and there's a real buzz when they come into marinas. And I wonder whether that's just because they're big and whether Rev will grab the top spot, or whether it's also the design and the kind of glamour around them. It would be interesting to see how people react, how real fanatics react.
Well, yeah, it will be. Yeah. So in terms of sailing yachts, there's only one sailing yacht project known so far to be in build. That's 127-metre Ocean Co. Y721, which is due to be launched next year. In terms of explorer yachts in this size category, there are 4 expected, including Rev, of course. The 140-metre plus Solaris at Lloyd's, the 111-metre NB724 under construction at Freyr in Spain, with a design by Marine Technic, which is known for the 2 Clevens they built.
So that's cool. So one sailing boat over 100 metres in build at Ocean Co., that's going to be one hell of a project, and 4 explorer yachts. I'm excited by that Solaris yacht, actually. That's good. We saw a snapshot of half of it going into a build shed not so long ago, and it looked like a really cool design. It's actually a Mark Newson designed boat, which is really interesting.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. In terms of exciting boats, the latest order announced is the 120-metre Project Signature, which is to be built by Amels Darman, designed by Espen Oino, and that's due for delivery in 2025. She'll be the largest superyacht built in the Netherlands to date, and the project was sold by Imperial.
That's such an exciting project. I know we don't know a huge amount about it at the moment, but I was having a look at the information they'd sent over the other day, and she's going to be powered by diesel electric engines and an azipod propulsion system, and promises lower levels of noise and vibration than any other yacht of her size that's ever gone before her. So that sounds like quite a claim and quite a challenge, but then it sounds like an incredible team behind it. If you've got Espen and Armels and Darman, if they can't do it, you sort of wonder who can.
Yeah, it's a heady mixture. But yeah, it's a massive project for Amels. I think their biggest is currently 83 meters. Here comes the sun. I need to check that right in if I'm wrong. But I think it is. But so Project Signature's much bigger.
Yeah. So as mentioned, there she'll be the largest yacht ever built in the Netherlands. And the Netherlands is quite near the top of the list in terms of countries building these boats right now. The top country is still Germany with 11 projects, followed by the Netherlands with 5. But it is interesting to see that some of the shipyards have their first 100 meter plus super yacht project under construction. So that's yards like Freyr in Spain and Aberking and Rasmussen, or Amels. So interesting to see some newcomers there.
Yeah, absolutely. So an active mega market. So 100 meter plus boats, 20 more expected over the coming years to take that 53 number way up. So we've got a few more headlines for you. The name of a new 50 meter Fed ship has been revealed this week as Totally Nuts. That's the yacht's name, Totally Nuts. I'm a big fan of that name. That's a real name I can get behind, especially knowing that this will become one of the fastest Fed ships ever with her water jet propulsion. Great looking boat too. You can check out photos of her on the Boat International website. Tankoa over in Italy have launched a new 50 meter called Olucan. She's the third hull in that 50-meter series from Tankoa and follows Vertige and Bintador. There's multi-hull news. I tell you, multi-hulls are having a moment. We're going to see more and more of them. JFA in France have launched their first Long Island 78 Powercat, a massive 11.17-meter beam on a 78-foot boat. It means there's tons of space on board. More signs that buyers are increasingly looking towards the twin-hull market. Perini Navi, some news from Italy again. Perini Navi has secured some investment from a company called Blue Sky Investment Group, and this new capital or this new investment will help the shipyard restructure and overcome what they were quoted as saying was a moment of significant financial strain. So fingers crossed for Perini. There's fewer bigger names in yachting, and we all love big Perini. So I know it feels like we talk about the Fort Lauderdale boat show every week on this podcast, but the statements are coming out thick and fast, and we've got a new one for you. Caroline, what can you tell us?
The latest from FLIBS is a very bullish statement from the organisers of the Fort Lauderdale boat show. The message was very clear: FLIBS stays on course. Andrew Doole, president of Informa US Boat Shows, said the following: FLIBS is a major economic driver for the marine industry and the surrounding community. We recognise the importance of the show and have spoken with key stakeholders, customers and local government officials, and the resounding response has been in support of moving forward with the outdoor event this fall. So it really sounds like that's going to go ahead.
No messing around from the organisers of FLIBS. They are pushing ahead, full steam ahead. We know a number of exhibitors have told us they won't be going, but organisers are confident they can still put on a show for the people of South Florida. So, yeah, we'll keep watching that with interest. Over in Monaco, there's a few more events taking place there as well. This last weekend, saw some very brave souls pedal water bikes 180 kilometres from Corsica to Monaco in aid of the Princess Charlene Foundation, which promotes water safety and learn to swim programmes.
It's a fantastic foundation that I was looking into it a bit, and it's got, you know, really clear aims to it, and it's helped over 730,000 children worldwide. So it's doing incredible things in a very sort of clear way. But I did have to look up what a water bike was. Embarrassingly, I thought it was kind of a bit like a pedalo, but it looks a lot more hardcore than that.
It's not a million miles away from a pedalo, so it's basically a road bike perched on a pair of sponsons, and the pedals power a small propeller. The Princess Charlene herself took part and crossed the line after 22 hours and 33 minutes. That is nuts. So 22 hours on the sea water bike pedaling across the Mediterranean. Boats famous or infamous, columnist Eddie Jordan was there at the conclusion and attended a very fancy gala, he tells me, at the palace that same night. He'll be telling us all about that event in his next column for Boat International in the November issue. So don't miss that. The whole thing was only slightly blemished by the arrest of UFC fighter Conor McGregor, who was due to take part in the race.
Yeah, there was some serious drama there. He had to withdraw from the race the day before. I'm not sure quite how much we can say about that at the moment. But Conor, of course, has a yacht himself. He has a Prestige 750, which is apparently inspired by boxing legend Muhammad Ali. He's posting about it on Instagram every now and then, so you can go and check it out if you follow his account. And he's also sailing around the Med at the moment. Obviously, he was in Calvi earlier, but he's having announced his retirement. That's what he's decided to do. Not a bad plan, as lots of people would agree. But there's a bit of speculation that he could be considering returning to UFC. If you follow these things, he had officially retired, but then he sort of dropped some hints on Twitter about maybe going back for one final fight. In which case, who knows? If you're interested in a Prestige 750, watch out. It could be back on the market.
Thanks, Charlotte. Now, we're in the midst of the production schedule for the November issue of Boat International and Boat International US edition. What have you got for us in that issue, guys?
Yeah, we've got some really interesting things coming up, a lot of kind of innovation stuff. We've got a special aviation supplement, which we do every year for people that have jets and helis or are looking to get into it. And there's an interesting feature that I was reading the other day about sort of comfort on board and what different airlines are doing to make flying a less taxing experience. This is private aviation, not commercial. So there's lots of stuff going on. A lot of it's to do with noise insulation and better humidification. At Boeing, they're doing something where they're getting their jets to fly or building their jets to fly at a lower altitude. So this apparently reduces jet lag and fatigue, and it also raises the humidity levels on board so that your lungs and sinuses feel more comfortable. So if you are thinking of going somewhere like New Zealand for the America's Cup, then that would be a good time to invest. But the bit I really enjoyed was looking at what's to come in the future of private aviation. One of the people interviewed in the magazine was saying, in the future, you'll be able to do things like turn on the lights on your plane just by looking at them, or there will be monitors hidden in bulkheads that will just appear by you looking that way. And you'll also have completely wireless surroundings. You'll have surfaces and textures that will have sort of sensory feedback. So it will all be much more interactive. So it sounds like quite a cool future. And then the other thing we've got coming up is there's a piece up. I'd be interested to hear what other people think of this, that we've got a piece about fractional ownership. So these big yachts like The World, which obviously has been around for a while, and then Njord is coming up. So it's a system where people buy a cabin on board rather than buying the whole thing. And I think a lot of people are slightly snotty about them. If you're someone who loves yachts and designed your own dream yacht, it can be hard to understand why people would want to compromise and have just a fraction of that. But hearing from the people that have been there, I can see the advantages, especially in terms of these more complicated adventure destinations. A lot of the adventure companies were saying, you know, for charters as well, it can be really hard if you want to go somewhere really remote to find a group of people that are available at the dates you're available, that the dates the boat are available, that can come with you. And if you're kind of testing the waters to see if it's something you can want to do more of, it's a really cost-effective, savvy solution for sort of dipping your toe into that kind of environment. So, yeah, it was an interesting piece.
And on the boat front, we've got we've been on board the legendary M5, formerly Mirabella 5, built in the UK, 77.6-metre single-masted sloop, the biggest one in the world, a hell of a boat, and she's just been refitted over in Italy. So we've been on board her for a look around, and she's on the cover. Is that right, Caroline?
Yep, she's an incredible boat, huge sailing yacht, and we have a very cool picture looking down the mast on the cover, so do keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, I love that cover.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And there are lots of other refit insight and projects as well featured in that issue, so do not miss it. But first of all, pick up the October issue, which is on sale now. That's about it from us this week. That's all the news that's fit to talk about. Stay tuned for Cecile Gowett's interview with the president of North Sails and sailing legend, Ken Reed.
So, well, for fans of sailing, obviously you don't need an introduction. But I'm curious, how do you introduce yourself, or how do you like to introduce yourself?
That's a good question. I guess first and foremost, kind of world sailor, president of North Sails, executive vice president of North Technology Group, which is a whole series of companies that we own under that umbrella. Yeah, I would still like to think competitive sailor.
Good. I'm curious, if you had not become a sailor, what do you think you'd be doing today?
Well, I would say, well, when I went to Boston University, and I for sure was kind of going down the legal path, the lawyer path, and took a bunch of pre-law courses and did my senior thesis on prisons and prison reform and whether Wow. prison reform was real. So I was kind of going down that path, but at the same time, I was one of the few people, and I remember in my senior year of college, I was one of the few people who had a job coming out of college. And that was when you were drafted, you know, there was no professional sailing per se then. So you were drafted as a good college sailor, and I'd won College Sailor of the Year, and I was a three-time All-American. And so I had a good reputation coming out of school, and you kind of got drafted by a sailmaker, a boat builder, a spar maker, and you got into the business side of the world. And I had a job. So my senior year, I was kind of not coasting, but certainly I was one of the few in school who knew what he was doing that summer and into the next, at least part of my life. And sure enough, that was a long time ago, and hasn't stopped since.
Well, you know, everybody seems to be talking these days about trying to get more people into sailing. So obviously you were an athlete in college sailing then, but what was your personal journey like? How did you get into it?
I hated sailing so much, I can't even tell you. So as a kid, I was scared to death. My father, it's a great story where my father, essentially when I was about 10 or 11, 10 years old maybe, forced me to go back to Barrington Yacht Club Junior Sailing for one final. He said, just give it one more shot. And I used every excuse in the book not to go sailing. And I went back that summer, and it was kind of a different environment for me because I was from a small landlocked town called Seekonk. And Barrington, you know, everybody in the program was from Barrington. So I was kind of an outsider, which I think is a big deal for a young kid. Yeah. But I met another guy. We played, our family played hockey in the winter and ice hockey in the winter and sailed in the summer. I met a kid from East Providence, another local landlocked town who I played hockey with, and we became best buddies. And the next thing you know, we went from wanting to quit to winning everything in sight, sailing together. And it was quite a remarkable turnaround. But if my father hadn't forced me to go back that one final summer, Lord only knows what I'd be doing today.
That's amazing. Yeah, sailing is not that easy when you're a child.
I think it's that, you know, sailing in a way that the sport is the easy part. It's the social interaction that's the hard part.
Right.
And, you know, my brother runs a place called Sail Newport here in town, which is a huge public sailing center. And they, you know, in a normal summer, they put, you know, over 1,000 kids through their junior programs. And they get it. This is about interaction. You know, my daughter hated sailing because she hated opties. She kind of hated being by herself. So I didn't get her, you know, she just wasn't super competitive. But, you know, now as she's grown up, she likes it more and more. But same thing. It's that social side, I think, as a young kid that makes such a big difference.
So what are the qualities you need to be a champion in sailing, do you think? Is it a physical thing? Is it a mental thing?
It's certainly both. It's a good question. I think champions of anything have some sort of innate drive that others may not have, or if they do have it, they don't have it to such an extreme. So, you know, I went through a part of my life that I loved, and I state this often, that I loved winning. I loved being the person getting up on stage at the end and having a trophy in my hands. And somehow that switched to hating to lose. And it's a big difference. I hate losing far more than I love winning. So I really don't care about the trophy or even the accolades. I just don't want to see my name up on the scoreboard in second or anything else play any other place besides the winning position. I can just leave a regatta at the end of a regatta and not go to the awards, not do anything, and just be happy as heck as long as I didn't lose. And so it's a big difference. And I think a lot of people go through that switch in their lives, that change. But anyway, there's some sort of drive that we're born with. You know, my father was an athlete. My mother was a crazy good athlete. She's in the Connecticut College Athletic Hall of Fame as a four-sport athlete. My father was a hockey player and, of course, a really good local sailor. And so somehow we were born with it, my brother and I, and yeah, hasn't stopped yet.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, it sounds like this summer particularly, you've had a chance to do a lot of sailing.
Yeah, this summer has been different, right, for the whole world. And, you know, fortunately, you got to get lucky sometimes. And, you know, the announcement of the Olympics in 2024, having this offshore double-handed event, kind of meeting up with Jeannot at an opportune time when they had, in essence, a factory boat available to do some double-handed sailing. We started this a small, you know, a double-handed project using one of these Sunfast 3300s about 2 months before COVID happened. And so I was already kind of well on my way. And it just so happens that double-handed sailing and sailing like that is really one of the few things, at least here in the United States, one of the few things that's continued for obvious social distancing, lack of large crowds. So I kind of, like most of my life, I got lucky, tripped over it, have a great boat, wonderful partners in Jeannot, and of course all the help from North Sails. And then my brother Brad and I did some sailing, Susie Leach and I did some sailing. So in essence, except for the fact that I haven't been on an airplane for half the summer, it seemed like somewhat normal summer. You know, there's been a lot of sailing. We get to sail whenever we want here. So that's pretty remarkable. So I think I'm one of few who can say, you know, it hasn't totally been interrupted for us.
Well, that's great. Well, the Ida Lewis race that you took part in recently, that's one of the few regattas that actually was maintained this summer, right?
Yeah, you know, that we did the New England Solo Twin, which was about a month prior, the Ida Lewis Distance Race. A lot of these short offshore races are still happening. You know, around Edgartown race happened. There's some sailing up in Maine going on. It's just not those standard, you know, there's a ton of local sailing going on, by the way. And yeah. I think that's the thing that's going to come out of this is how the revamping of local sailing, local yacht club sailing, beer can sailing, just the fun going sailing with your friends, you know, I think what we're learning is you don't have to have these big, elaborate, social, expensive, sponsored regattas. Regattas are happening with, you know, three people on a race committee boat sitting around drinking beer, trying their hardest to write down the correct times. And by the way, who cares if they don't? It just seems like the sailing that's happening is more fun this summer. And I hope that is a long lasting hand-me-down from the COVID crisis, that we have broken back into great fun local sailing again, because it's missed. It has been missed. It's very clear it's been missed. And it's about time. It's about time that we've smartened up and gotten back into it, actually.
What do you think the Ida Lewis race, particularly since I caught on to that the other day, was really successful? There were a lot of participants.
Yeah, I think they doubled their best participation ever. And again, people are hungry. They're having fun. So it was crewed races offshore. You know, it was 170 miler for the bigger boats. It was 150 miler for all the double-handed boats. And then they did something really neat where they did a 35 miler, kind of a huge lap of Narragansett Bay for any boats who didn't want to go overnight. And that was hugely popular. So again, it's creating regattas that don't have to have Rolex as your sponsor, and it doesn't have to have huge social functions. Mm-hmm. People are itching to go sailing, and they're proving that they just don't need these big fancy events. So let's just go sailing for the sake of going sailing. And I think a lot of the yacht clubs around here are breaking records on beer can, you know, that Tuesday night, Wednesday night style after work racing. And it's great. It's perfect. It's sailing again. It's it's not fancy. It's just sailing. And that's a good thing to see.
That's great. Well, you were sailing, as you mentioned, with Susie Reed. And I think you said one time that sailing is still a boys' club. So tell me a little bit about sailing with Susie and how did you get paired up?
Well, it's Susie Leach. I would be doing her a disservice.
Brad. I said with Brad. Let me rephrase that one, please.
Yeah. No. Susie and I got together to sail together starting in January at the Fort Lauderdale to Key West race. And that was the first double-handed race I had ever done, and her. And, you know, I did a little scouting around for a while, and I knew Susie. I didn't know her well. I've sailed against her for 1,000 years. I knew her way back in 1995 when she was doing the bow on Bill Koch's Mighty Mary, America's Cup. I mean, okay. She's an athlete. She's tough as nails, and she had some navigation prowess, which I knew of because I sailed against her last summer in the 12 meter worlds, and she was on Enterprise and I was on Challenge 12. So I knew she had some navigation skills. I knew she could boat handle, obviously, and I knew she was tough. So we just started talking about going sailing together and decided, well, let's give this Key West race a shot. And that turned into more sailing this summer. We did a bunch of practicing. I wanted to sail some with my brother because we hadn't sailed together in a long time. And he brings a whole different skill set. He's just fast, you know. So Susie's a boat handler and a navigator. My brother's just fast. So it was really interesting for me to sail with two people of completely different skill sets. And, you know, you say about the boys' club, there's no question that sailing is a boys' club on a majority of levels. And part of it is strength and weight on the rail. I mean, a lot of these boats still completely rely on big people sitting on the rail and the stability that comes along with it. And I just don't think girls, you know, everybody asks me, how do you grow the sport of sailing? Well, in essence, we've told 50% of the human population, which is the female population, that they're not really invited to a lot of these events. And I mean that with all due respect, it's just the nature of the beast in many ways. So this double-handed offshore stuff, the mixed gender thing, is terrific. But we got a long way to go. We have to get girls in the skill sets on these boats. And you know, I've talked to a number of the French female sailors, and the reason why they get into single-handed and double-handed sailing is because they're frustrated just being the downtrodden crew member on a TP-52 and have to do the sewer, and because they're the smallest person on the boat. You know, it's the truth. The females just don't get the opportunity to get in the skill set positions. So seeing Susie really turn into a good navigator has been terrific. But we got a long way to go. And by the way, I put my hand up. You know, I didn't see a lot of girls sailing with us on Comanche. I didn't see any girls going around the world with us on Puma. So I'm certainly one of the ones to blame. But at the same time, hopefully, the realization that we can do something as a group of sailors to make it more inclusive to a larger group of people, then hopefully we're on the right path.
Great. Are there some of programs taking place now that you like that try to get children from different backgrounds interested in the sport of sailing?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I'm closest with Sail Newport, and Sail Newport has had a huge influence on the region around here. They have a fourth grade sailing program that essentially sailing is part of the fourth grade curriculum at all the at the public schools. And so it's gotten an incredible mix, socioeconomic mix of people into the sport of sailing. And that is great to see. So programs like that, tabbing local school systems at early ages just to get people out on the water and hopefully get them hooked. And then creating programs that can economically help support people that may not be able to afford it. you know, this is something that yacht clubs can do. Certainly these public sailings centers like Sail Newport can do, but they can only do it with the help of the wealthier people because they have their costs. You know, it's not like how they do it and all the people they hire down there are free. Yeah. So, you know, for people who can afford it, supporting these yacht club or community sailing programs is hugely important. So then they in turn can reach out to different groups of people who probably have never had a chance to do what we do and what we love doing. So it's a nice little circle that's starting and hopefully it continues.
I hope so. It's great to see kids on the water. Well, you have a job that allows you to go sailing. Sounds kind of like the most perfect job in the world. What does a typical day look like for you at North Sail?
There are plenty of days I'll switch with you. How's that?
Okay. Probably
especially recently. Yeah. Well, listen, my job, my day job here is really North Sails and in a bigger, you know, as part of the leadership group of this North Technology Group. And it's a good sized company. You know, all these are good sized companies. We all jump in, whether it's helping Southern Spars or Future Fibers or North Sails, Edgewater Powerboats. We're a smaller group of executives who help all those companies try to do their very best. And we're owned by a PE firm called Oakley Capital with the chairman Peter Dubins in England, who has been a great custodian for North Sails, because I think North Sails as a brand is something you don't really own. It's something that you continue, that you continue and you help prosper. So the North Sails brand and the clothing company that is happening now, I mean, it's a good size operation. And, you know, this, as with most other companies these past several months, it hasn't been easy. You know, we have to anticipate how big these companies are going to be coming out of COVID. What, you know, we have to look into crystal balls every day as to what the economic environment looks like over the next couple of years. You know, is there a vaccine? Is there not a vaccine? We've been absolutely pummeled by the fact that essentially the Grand Prix racing scene is gone this year for the most part. You know, we have the Vendée Globe, which is huge in France. America's Cup is still happening, which is big for our company. But the fact is that, let's call it 90%+ of big races were canceled this year.
Right.
Thank goodness for local racing. Thank goodness for the cruising community. We took it on immediately. Literally the first week this started going downhill and downhill fast. We got on a call and decided we're now a cruising company. We're now a cruising sail company. This is North Sails, that is.
Yes.
And that was the smartest thing we did. We jumped into cruising. We remade our company overnight into a cruising sail company. And it has, maybe saving us is probably too strong a word, but it has helped save the company as the company that we all still know. So a long-winded answer to your question. Listen, I love my job. I've always loved my job. It affords me to do things that I've never thought in my wildest dreams I would ever do, never mind just in the sailing world, but just in the world, period. But at the same time, there are plenty of tough days. We've had to pare back the company a little bit, and these are friends that we've been working with for sometimes 20, 30 years who aren't with the company anymore. We've had to make some really hard decisions, and you know, all of them are personal in one form or fashion, and that's not a lot of fun. I can tell you.
Right. Well, it sounds like you answered a question I was going to ask you, but basically you did. So events like the Ocean Race and the America's Cup are very important to your company. How important are they to the sport of sailing in general, do you think?
Yeah, I think they're hugely important because you look at, well, we always used to call it the big three, and now it's kind of the big four. You have the America's Cup, the Ocean Race, the Olympics, And really, I think the Vendée Globe has stepped into that kind of offshore adventure, single-handed craziness. So those four events are really, they become a focal point. They become the PR campaign for the sport. When I did the Volvos, when I did the America's Cups, you could see a bump, not just for a company like North Sails, but I think you could see a bump in the marine industry in general, because all of a sudden sailing was on TV and sailing was all over the news, and sailing, now it probably isn't as big a bump because of the advent of the internet, because it's kind of in our face every single day. But there's no question that the big sailing events and the PR that they produced for the sport were huge for us back in the day. Now they're just, they help maintain, and as always, they help push the sport forward. This foiling, flying generation of boats and engineering and products and people, people come up with these crazy ideas, and then people have to pull them off, and then people have to figure out how to sail them. It's just a different world, right? I mean, this is craziness. So these Vendée boats, I talked to Charlie Enright after he just did a transatlantic and 11th hour racing with his crew, and he's just shaking his head. He's like, you're bouncing along. This is just miserable. he said, there are times where it's fast and furious and you're just having the time of your life. And then he said, it's just violent. They're wearing helmets down below, not on deck, but down below. So anyway, it's a different world and a different sport. Kiteboarding has certainly changed it. Foiling on kiteboards, foiling windsurfing. This is all moth sailing. This is all the generation. This is all what our kids are going to do. And our kids' kids are probably going to do something even crazier than that. So the evolution of the top end of the sport is critical. And we have to keep giving it room to grow.
Well, it's probably driving you in research and development, in any case, at the company. Is there anything in the works that you could share with us?
Well, absolutely. By the way, the America's, all four of those events, Olympics, Vendée, America's Cup, Ocean Race, they have been primary drivers for companies like Southern Spars and Future Fibers and North Sails to push the envelope further and out into the future. So there's no question that that is a big part of how the development of the sport of sailing happens. With that said, our structured LUF program, we call it Helix, is spreading into pretty much all forms and fashion of sail, of especially of front sail designs, downwind sails and headsails. Headsails, anything forward of the mast for the most part, is developing into a real structured LUF program. That does two things. That by increasing the load a little bit on the LUF of the sail, so let's say a halyard or a halyard lock or a tack strop on a sail to get more LUF tension, it's actually decreasing the loads on many other aspects of the boat. So it's changing the structured LUF in Helix sails is really changing how engineering happens in a boat, in a mast and shrouds, and how you sail the boats. We're getting so much wider range out of, and it's good, by the way. It might sell us fewer sails in the short term, but I think it helps increase participation because we're getting much wider wind ranges out of sails with just small engineering changes. So it doesn't sound like a big thing, but I think it's a huge thing right now. And the America's Cup, they're doing these twin skin mainsails. All the engineering and the aero implications that even the wing spars had to all of our software. Software is as good as the people who write it. And we got we have the smartest people in the industry on the Southern Spars, Future Fibers, North Sails side. And we love when that package all comes together because we know it's going to be perfect and we know it's going to be the best of the best. And we know we're going to keep learning and growing from it. So it's terrific. It's a great teamwork when that all happens, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's touch a little bit on the super yacht segment. You know, our magazine focuses on the largest yachts in the world. And it's no secret that even though we still build very beautiful sailing yachts, there is not a very large demand for them in the mega yacht world. What do you think it will take for that to change, or can it change?
Well, it can. I've talked to a bunch of project coordinators. I've talked to owners. I've talked to designers and engineers. This is no question a problem. The super yacht part of the marine industry is obviously huge. It's a big part of North Sails and Southern Spars and Future Fibers from a overall revenue standpoint. It's quite a large part. From a percentage of sales we make, it's a tiny part, but an overall revenue side, it's a huge part. So we take it very, 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 very seriously. I think there's a couple things at play here. Number one is these boats are so bloody complicated. They take so long to build and they're so complicated. How do we simplify these super yachts, first of all? Because the systems that go into them, and again, a lot of super yachts are purchased by people who are in their retirement years. So, instead of going out and building a new super yacht, that it may be a 3-4 year project, you can just go buy one off the street. You know, that's one thing that's happening. There's no question that delay and pull the trigger time to when it's actually going to be done is huge.
Right.
But how do we make them simpler? Because it just seems like the systems going in them are getting more and more and more complex. And that makes them harder to sail. It makes them, more things to break,
yeah.
Just harder to build and harder to engineer and harder to put that whole package together. I don't know if it's ever going to happen. It's probably a dream of mine, but, it's got to be something that's in the back. If I could afford it, I would do a super yacht that looks very different from the modern super yachts that are being made right now. And it would be some kind of simple, I have a 35-foot powerboat that we putz around on weekends, because when I get off from sailing, I guess I don't want to go sailing. Turn the key and lift a beer to my mouth and off we go, you know. But my powerboat is the most simple powerboat on the planet. And I would do a bigger version of that. It just simple, simple, simple. It can happen, but I think we gotta start selling that our engineering, simplicity, to make something simply is usually harder than making something complex, because you can always throw more stuff at something. I think once we started going down the path of simplicity, it will happen more naturally, and hopefully it would be a reason to entice people to build more big boats.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are talking about our environment and so forth, and sailing seems like the answer. I mean, after all, the power of the wind is free, is abundant. So it seems like it would be logical, but.
There's no question. I mean, this is the sustainability, the environmental impact of our sport, of the human race is at the forefront every single day. So, Ocean Works and 11th Hour Racing and all these different groups who are, North Sails Collection has been a huge promoter and gives back a percentage of their revenue towards sustainable, we work really hard with plastics companies that are recycling plastics into, by the end of this year, all of our sail bags, all of our sail ties, and we'll even have a line of sail products that will be 100% recycled plastic.
Oh, that's
so
great.
People are trying, but at the same time, we have, a lot of these super yachts, people are saying, okay, I'll do a super yacht if you make sure it is fully green. like literally zero emissions, zero. And so people are working on it, and that's good. And you're right. The power of the wind is our big advantage there. So let's take advantage of it and let's not stop.
Oh, I agree. That'd be great. So what's next for you in the next few months? Are you going to be going to New Zealand?
It looks like I will be going to New Zealand. In one form or fashion, I mean, from, you know, we supply the sails to three of the four teams. We supply the masts to three of the four teams. These are some of our best clients in the world. This is the new opinion leaders of the sport. You know, the not only the heads of these programs, but the sailors themselves. So it's important in my position to be there anyway. What I've been able to do the last couple of America's Cups is kind of piggyback that with an opinion leader's role and do the world commentating, kind of the color commentating, which I really enjoy. And frankly, it doesn't really take away from my day job because I'm kind of doing my job in a way. I'm there with all the super yacht clients. I'm there with the sailors. I'm there with the teams. I'm making sure that everybody gets a fair shake in television and working with a television team who are really fun to work with and really talented and want to put on a better show. And I think that show, like I said before, that the PR that comes from events like the America's Cup is crucial. So it's not done yet because it's kind of hard getting into New Zealand these days as it is traveling anywhere else in the world. But yeah. But we're talking about it, and I would say there's a fair chance that I'll end up doing some or all of the television stuff once I get down there.
Oh, very exciting. That's great. Okay, Ken, well, thank you so very much. It was a pleasure to catch up with you, and good luck with the business. Good luck to all of us.
Good luck to all of us, exactly. Still, thank you for your time, and your magazine is gorgeous as ever.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
If I could flick a switch, I would give you more reason to put sailing yachts in your magazine versus motor yachts. That's the only thing I would do. But I understand that you have to go where the action is right now. And there's probably a heck of a lot more motor yachts than there are sailing yachts in the world. But shame on us. We got to figure this out, and we got to get more sailing yachts out there so you guys can report on them. But your magazine is gorgeous as always, and thanks for what you guys do for the PR for sailing, that's for sure.
Very much appreciated. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Boat Briefing, Boat International's weekly podcast with all the news and updates from the superyacht world. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and speak to you next week.